You're listening to War for Idiots, a podcast by idiots for idiots.
All right, we're live.
All right, man, tell us when we're live.
We're live. In fact, we're so live, I said that during the intro.
No, seriously, though, tell us when we're live.
No, seriously, we're live.
All right, you ready to kick off?
I can see you on the tube, YouTube. Awesome.
We're good to kick off. Okay.
Yeah, wait, so, we're live now.
Let me just get this bad boy up.
Oh, mate, the bad boy's on the screen and bearded. Oi, just notice you haven't actually said anything, but...
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, podcast listeners all around the world.
Welcome, I trimmed my beard.
To another episode of War for Idiots. As always, we are your hosts. I am Rich the Chump.
And I am Mick the Simpleton with a nicely trimmed beard.
And we are indeed the idiots that you have been looking for. And today we are talking about hybrid warfare.
Not a thing.
Also known as grey zone operations or grey zone tactics.
Also not a thing.
And Mick has already spilled his opinion on it. So that's a good start. Thank you very much, Mick. But before we start this episode...
It's not the show where I get to hold back my opinion, is it? Is it?
No, it's not. It's not. But before we start, we just wanted to thank everyone for your ongoing support of this humble, grassroots, little podcast that we like to call WFI, War for Idiots. And we want to reach more people.
We'll call it WTF.
No, it's WFI. That's why everyone's looking at you strange. But no, we want to thank everyone that's been listening, that's been downloading, that's been watching us on YouTube. Our support has been growing. Listeners have been growing. And people have been helping us grow. So what can you do to help us? Well, you can tell your friends. You can share us on social media. You can comment and you can get involved in the discussion. As we like to say, please help us spread the word, but don't spread COVID. That would be extremely bad. Now, as promised.
American guests don't spread COVID. Hey, mate, there were some people on Twitter that were talking about us this week.
There were some people on Twitter who helped us get some more likes, get some more followers and advertise tonight's episode. And I said we would give a shout out. So we'll do a quick shout out to them now. Some really funny comments I think we could start the show with. The first one is from Ned Dobbs. And he commented, a really entertaining and informative podcast. If you don't listen to it, you are un-Australian.
Which Ned was my ethics lecturer when I did my master's program.
I wholeheartedly agree with that comment.
Yep.
Very patriotic comment.
Just released a new book. Everyone follow Ned Dobos on Twitter.
There you go. Phil Bizzardo, I had the pleasure of working with Phil. Great guy. And he just wrote, "These idiots are worth listening to." Again, some very, very wise words there.
It's accurate.
Josh Vecchino. Hope I said that right, Josh.
He
wrote, "Share a podcast where one host is really diligent, eloquent, prepared. And the other one isn't, but don't mention which one is which." And I think we all know which one is which there.
What I don't like is that he put prepared in there. Like every other part of that description matches me, except for prepared. Josh. And Josh is a member of the TDP community. So
there we go. And then Masco wrote, "These guys are worth a listen. They discuss important hashtag military issues in a meaningful but lighthearted way. Hashtag Mil Twitter, hashtag PME."
Oh, and also, that's the commander of 6th Brigade in Australia. So, awesome.
And quick shout out to the following people that just retweeted and support us. Matt Kelly, Drink and Think, Jay Foster, Kiwi Sapper, Just Christianed, James Hollis, Gareth W., The Dead Prussian, Mike Cook, The Lens of History, and John Simeone. No, honestly, thank you very much, everyone, for your support. Look, we really like it. We love doing what we do. And it's only because of people like you that help us, listen to us, help us spread what we love doing, and then we can keep on doing it.
Yeah,
speaking of what we love doing,
it's heartwarming.
It's very heartwarming. That's very right. And speaking about what we love doing, we could not do it without our amazing sponsors. Our first one tonight is Good to Go Gear, G2G. Now, Good to Go Gear is an Australian veteran-owned business that has been supporting customers for over a decade. whether it's military, camping, adventure, workwear, or first aid, they have a wide range that is ready to be shipped directly to you. Check out their catalog at www.goodtogogear.com.au and get the best gear that is G2G. Now, they offer a 30-day, 100% satisfaction guarantee, and they ship both to the US of A and also to this humble little island called Australia. So, what are you waiting for? Honestly, what are you waiting for? Go and check out.
I'm not waiting. I'm wearing my Good to Go.
What are you waiting for? Good to Go.
Actually, I wanted, you want to know something?
Yeah.
I had the blue shirt on before, but I didn't want to.
Yeah. It'd be awkward. It'd be awkward to wear like a uniform.
It would look like uniform, like. Listeners can't see this, but the viewers can, like the YouTube viewers.
It'd be very strange.
So you got these wearing cool blue wicking shirts. So that's what Richie's back looks like.
That's not right.
But does this look weird if we're both wearing it?
Extremely. Extremely. So what are you waiting for? Go and check out Good to Go Gear. That's G2G gear. Gear that is truly good to go. As you said, I'm sporting my amazing blue long sleeve Good to Go wicking t-shirt. I'm going to wear it tonight. And then because it's a bit cold, I'm probably going to keep it on tomorrow and go exercise in it. But one thing for the astute viewers on YouTube, you probably noticed that compared to last week, my location has changed. I'm in this amazing studio. I've got this amazing microphone, and hopefully the quality of my amazing voice sounds so much better.
But apart from that, it's all right.
But it is honestly because of the amazing people who sponsor this show, Good to Go Gear being one of them. So
thanks for the new kit, basically. So, you know, that's for those listeners that have never had to wear a brown shirt, but pay for their own studio and kit, it costs a little bit. So having someone like Good to Go Gear, an Australian veteran-owned business, supporting us, is it's great because it means I don't have to put up with Richie talking through Bluetooth microphone anymore. Although what I'm really upset about is you've now got a better microphone than me.
It's so much better than your microphone.
I've got a field microphone converter.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's...
it's amazing. So, hybrid warfare. We're going to talk about hybrid warfare tonight, and I am very excited about this. I have been reading so much about hybrid warfare, gray zone tactics, gray zone operations. I've just been sort of anyone that's been walking past, I'm like, have you heard of this? I need to talk about it before Friday. So I'm pretty excited. So what we want to do is start with...
a message from the Woolworth staff. Stop walking up to them.
Stop walking up and shaking poor Scotty.
They're on the great EP war of 2020, so just leave them alone.
So what is hybrid warfare? Well, it all starts, I'd like to start this with a quote, and it's a very Australian quote, so do bear with me. And it's one that I found from June 2019. At a conference last week, Australia's Defence Minister, Linda Reynolds, and the Defence Force Chief, Angus Campbell, referred to national security risk using two terms that may not be familiar to many. In her speech, Senator Reynolds said, and I quote, "What is clear now is that the character of warfare is changing, with more options for pursuing strategic ends just below the threshold of traditional armed conflict. What some experts like to call grey zone tactics or hybrid warfare."
So, two points though. One, when you're a minister, you don't call them senator, you call them minister as their title. So I'll
I just read what was there.
That journalist got it wrong.
Helpful as always. Yeah. What's your second point?
No, I wasn't planning on being.
Nothing better than saying, listen, no.
Oh,
two
sorry.
Points.
I was supposed to say that at the first one. This point's not going to help.
All right. So look, it's very interesting that midway through last year, that was announced, two terms that you may not have heard before, hybrid warfare and gray zone tactics. And I feel like now here we are less than a year later, and they are quite prolific terms that everyone is familiar with.
And I would argue that it's when it says some experts like to call gray zone tactics and hybrid warfare, I like that she didn't say just experts. She's quite a good minister for defense. And in the nuance of the language, you know, politicians are brilliant at their, you know, this sort of nuance, or they're terrible. You get one or the other, right? But it's very, very interesting to the points that we're going to discuss tonight is that she made sure she had that some experts, because she is clearly aware of the debate.
That's right. And the debate, well, let's start with the debate. So if you look up hybrid warfare, and the picture that we utilize to advertise tonight's show is a green diamond with some blue circles. And I think it kind of summarizes.
Where did you get that from? There's no issues.
I don't think we need to ask questions. So it kind of summarizes.
You didn't ask questions on climate change. Look what happened to that.
It summarizes what you could say hybrid warfare is. So in the middle, for those that are listening, hybrid warfare is a combination of multiple conventional and unconventional tools of warfare. Okay. Yeah, so that's quite clever. It's combining conventional and the unconventional. And then around the outside, it gives you some examples of that: economic warfare, regular military forces, special forces, irregular warfare, support of local unrest, information warfare, propaganda, diplomacy, and cyber attacks. And I think in its most simplest terms, what we're saying is hybrid warfare is getting things that you see on the battlefield and combining them with things that you don't see on the battlefield towards a common goal. And I think a lot of the sort of debate that's out there is that this is not new. This is not new to combine stuff that's on the battlefield with stuff that's off the battlefield towards winning a conflict. This is just normal warfare. It's not really any sort of hybrid warfare. And I think that's the first stumbling block that people come across, because as good as I like the picture, as good as I like the green diamond, I think that actually the debate about hybrid warfare extends much, much deeper than that.
Klaus was right about it.
Exactly. And it's kind of the same when we talked about, and I sort of want to finish the show with this, I won't do it now, but when we talked about counterinsurgency, people in the early 2000s were like, oh, this is a new type of warfare, you know, where these insurgencies are new to us. And, you know, it's, you just have to open any book that is remotely like history to be slapped in the face with something quite, quite wrong. So let's start with that place
and open the books, they slap me in the face too.
Good, like something out of Harry Potter. So we wanted to start.
Not Harry Potter. Well, maybe after the third episode, he's probably a little bit more hairy, but
he's a bit hairy. So we wanted to start with just looking at the terms. So that is a very basic term of or definition of hybrid warfare. Another one that you can find is hybrid warfare is a military strategy which employs political warfare and blends conventional warfare, irregular warfare, and cyber warfare with other influencing methods such as hashtag fake news, diplomacy, lawfare, haven't heard that word before, and
really
foreign
like a whole blog
electoral,
far more successful than us,
electoral interventions. So I think this sort of description of hybrid warfare takes it to the next step, where you're talking about different things. Okay, there's diplomacy, there's lawfare, electoral intervention, which is a bit of a deep dive that we're going to do as well. So the question that I have is, well, how does this differ from normal warfare? And I think if you accept that warfare is an engagement in or the actions involved in war or conflict, you could argue that all those things we spoke about before, diplomacy, fake news, lawfare, cyber attacks, et cetera, that they could just be a form of warfare. Do we really need to come up with hybrid warfare to encompass what those things are? And I think that's a lot of the debate as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've been teaching a class with some young Australian Army lieutenants and we're working through what we understand war to be. We're spending 8 weeks doing it. The poor junior officers have to spend 8 weeks with me, but we're having this debate, and every time I do a survey, I give them like different options. You know, is the character of war changing, or does technology just make war completely different?
Yeah,
and then I always give them a third option, which just says, basically screw Clausewitz, screw all the theorists, war is war, man. The war is war mentality. But you've always got to leave that option in there, because that helps the debate too, right? Like, you know, I think we've got some good sort of language about hybrid warfare. I think it can be useful, but you'll always come up against people just like, war is war, man.
Exactly. And then in this sort of confusion of what's hybrid warfare, it's combining the conventional with the unconventional. What else? Well, it's law, it's diplomacy, it's cyber, it's information. Okay, what else? They start talking about domains, and this is where some of the literature starts to blend into an episode we did do in season one, and that's, of course, infamous multi-domain battle and the concept of multi-domain battle. And then when you start sort of asking yourself, well, how does hybrid warfare relate to multi-domain battle, where we're talking about fighting in all of these differing domains, one of which is classified. Most people sort of accept that information domain is one of the non-physical ones. Does this tie into hybrid warfare as well? And what we will see is that not only is there so many different layers to trying to understand this term, whether you believe it or not, of hybrid warfare, the layers are multiplied when you talk about domains on top of all these hybrid warfare areas as well. So it's pretty confusing.
Are they tactics? Are they domains? Are they...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I just found out today, I probably should have known earlier that, a conference I presented at last year, the book has been published for like the proceedings, and we're talking about rapid force projection, right? So how you rapidly, this is what the US Marine Corps do, right? Rapid force projection. The Australian Amphibious Task Group, they do that. The UK ATG, the Amphibious Task Group, they do that. My presentation, social media use for rapid force projection. It seems like a strange topic to bring up about, force projection, which is usually amphibious or aerial operations to move forces into an area of operations. And then you get this bloke stand up and go, I'm going to talk to you about how you can use social media to project force. And people, people starting to understand it now though.
So we're going to do a deep dive into social media when we talk about the 2016 US elections. And I want to come back to your point because I've never thought about force projection through the use of social media, but you just hit the nail on the head before the nail was even in the wood.
I can recommend a great chapter that offers a model for digital frameworks of engagement.
Yeah. Yes, I would be very interested in that. And by
if you read the chapter two, people, so I'll put the link in the YouTube chat.
Good. Okay, and then as we are sort of getting our way through this treacle of what is multi-domain battle.
Yeah, treacle, treacle as in like a delicious sugar-based syrup.
Yeah, yeah, but it's real thick. And you have to, if you're in a big bowl of it, you got to move around, right?
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, you're welcome. As we're going through multi-domain battle, as we're going through hybrid warfare, you will obviously have to stumble across the term gray zone operations. And I think in many ways, hybrid warfare was so COVID-19. I think gray zone is so 2020. I think people are using gray zone because it sounds sexy. And in fact, I ran across an article that said gray zone is the new black. You know what I mean? Special forces are starting to work in the gray zone. So what is the gray zone, right?
I'll take hybrid warfare. When people start saying gray zone, it's just like, come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
So
where's the gray zone? Okay, so definition that we found, and there's many definitions out there, but this one makes sense. Political warfare involves so-called gray zone operations or hybrid warfare, which include activities such as subversion, foreign interference, and the utilization of unmarked military forces. These measures are provocative and escalating, but still designed to be non-kinetic and non-lethal. And it's almost what we see here is, what happens in the gray zone is almost, another buzzword that's been floating around for a couple of years. It's soft power, radio, but you're doing the opposite. You know what I mean? But it's not hard power, it's military power. It's like pissing people off and doing subversion and being provocative and escalating.
Like you drank it with me.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like every time I'm halfway through a sentence and you talk, that's you. You're in the gray zone.
But on that, you mentioned two other buzzwords that really, really, really get my goat. Can you guess what that
is? What did I just say? Help remind me. I can't remember.
Non-kinetic and non-lethal, right? Like non-kinetic.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hate it when they're not interchangeable. I think they're very useful terms.
Just
when people use them interchangeable. So I'm just going to say, and I've got a quad chart, but I'm not going to bring it up, but you can have lethal effects using non-kinetic means.
Yeah.
And you can have non-lethal effects using kinetic means. It's just, one refers to energy. And I think I did a whole Dead Prussian podcast episode on these types of words being misused, like science words being applied as buzzwords.
Yeah.
But they are like, their buzzwords are useful if you're talking to people that adhere to them or believe in them.
Yeah,
you've got to understand what they mean, right?
You've got to understand how
people divert from the meaning so that you can either bring that diversion back on course or you can use that diversion to achieve your aim.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be the whole sum of what we're talking about tonight is that, hey, you know what? Believe it or not, this is a buzzword. Okay, but that's not in a negative sense. Just stating objectively, hybrid warfare, gray zone operations—they're the new buzzword. They're the new counterinsurgency, right? But the utility of it is what's under debate, and whether we should just say, "Hey, this is just normal warfare. Let's just readjust what we think warfare is," or whether it's useful labeling this as hybrid warfare. I think that's going to depend on who's asking the question, but we'll get there eventually. Okay, so. As we started doing our research for this, and I use the term "we" very loosely, I'm just trying to wrap your head around what is hybrid warfare, what is great.
So Ricky had a crack then at me about
not you.
I pulled out a book that I read years ago called Hybrid Warfare by William K. Murray and Peter Monsieur, and I'm just going to read something out just to prove that I have done research.
Do it.
It's on page one.
That's the joke of the year. That is the funniest joke you've made this year, Mick Cook. Well done.
All right.
That's very good.
That buzzword has become fashionable among both civilian and military leaders in the Pentagon and elsewhere. However, as Clausewitz stated nearly two centuries ago, although war changes its characteristics in various circumstances, in whatever way it manifests itself, war is still war. War in the 21st century has been and will remain a complex phenomenon, but its essence has not and will not change. Through a careful examination of history, this study illustrates that although there is little new in hybrid war as a concept, it is a useful means of thinking about war's past, present, and future. So that's hybrid warfare, fighting complex opponents from the ancient world to the present. Williamson Murray, Peter R. Mansour. So I'm holding up the book for people who can't see the show. I at least read page one. So I did do some research.
Thank you. On behalf of all of our listeners, thank you very much. All right. So let's really get into some of these terms. And we've got some great examples to go through and try to understand, you know, what is in the essence of calling something hybrid warfare and calling something gray zone operations. And I want to start with a bit of a summary that I came across from the Center for Strategic International Studies, CSIS, which is the top tier number one American think tank. And they summarize it, you know, fairly well. I highly recommend if you want to look into it.
Apart from those other think tanks that have listeners that listen to the show.
Except for those ones, obviously. Thank you. Thank you very much. And then they have summarized it in the following paragraph. The gray zone phenomenon is also referred to as hybrid threats, sharp power, as I mentioned before, not soft, sharp power, political warfare, malign influence, irregular warfare, and modern deterrence. Although it reflects an age-old approach, it is newly broad in its application. Today, the toolkit for coercion below the level of direct warfare includes information operations, political coercion, economic coercion, cyber operations, proxy support, and provocation by state-controlled forces. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, as well as non-state actors, are increasingly turning to these strategies to overcome U.S. strengths in global diplomacy, law, and commerce. They then break up what is gray zone tactics into three differing tactics. And I want to look into these because I find all of them extremely interesting. Okay.
Did you write gray zone there or was that their gray zone?
That's how they spelt it. So the first one is information warfare.
How do you know I'm talking about the spelling?
Because I was confused as well. So the first one is information warfare. And this is using disinformation, election tampering, which we're going to talk about later, and cyber attacks. Now,
on the air, we're not actually planning to tamper with any elections after.
No, that's not. No,
we're both going to go watch Space Force on Netflix after the show.
Definitely not. Now, what they're talking about is big data. You know, where is their biggest amount of data being collected? What data is out there, and how people are using that data? And they're talking about how China is doing some incredibly innovative things with regards to data. It reminded me of the book *Sapien* by Yuval Noah Harari, one of my all-time favorite books. And he talks about, you know, the only commodity that we have as humans is our information, and we are rapidly spilling that all over our social media for anyone to take and do whatever they want with, which is a very interesting way of looking at it. And and I'd have to say not untrue. The use of fake social media accounts, the use of bots, the use of trolls, which we're going to go into, which I find so fascinating. Attacks on divisive democracies, which we'll go to as well. And also the use of deep fakes. Have you heard of the term deep fake before?
Yeah, I used to work in information warfare.
Of course. So you've heard of the term deep fake. All right.
I love it. I love the idea of it from the evil side of me, which is probably 75%.
Yep. The vast majority of what we see, yes.
Loves the idea of deep fake. The 25% of me, which is that reminds every other part of me that I love living in liberal democracies, is really bloody concerned about deepfakes.
Yeah. Let me read something out. So this is from an Aspie article. It's called Weaponized Deepfakes. It's a really good article. Let me read the first paragraph. The first paragraph is a picture of a middle-aged woman with short brown hair. It's the biography of the woman who's writing. I'll read a few. I won't read it all. I'll read some of it. Fakes are all around us. Academic analysis suggests that they're difficult to spot without new sensors, software, or other specialized equipment, with 1 in 5 photos you see being fraudulent. The exposure of deep fakes and the services they facilitate can potentially lead to suppression of information and a general breakdown in confidence in public authorities and trust. Now, this goes on for that's half of it, okay? And then the intro paragraph signs off as GPT-2 deep learning algorithm. And then the next paragraph you read of this article is, this foreword to this report was written by a machine. The machine used a deep fake algorithm, a form of artificial intelligence, to generate text and a headshot. Deep fakes are increasingly realistic and easy to create. If you want to grab my attention about AI and bots creating deep fakes on the internet, then you start your unbelievably interesting article with a paragraph written by an artificial intelligence machine that is coherent and actually makes sense. It is such a great way to start this weaponizing of deep fakes concept. And then this goes to talk about how deep fakes is the planting of fake information on the internet. Now,
like Obama videos, you've seen all the fake Obama videos?
Yeah. And the deep fakes, it doesn't matter if they're obviously fake, you still took the time to watch it. Now, you may not believe it, but someone will, right? But if you're an intelligence organization, that's something you need to analyze. Now, you do that thousands and thousands and thousands of times, you clog a system. This concept of deep fake is not new with regards to how to stop something being processed, but it is new with regards to using the information.
And it will convince some people, right?
Yeah. So,
deepfake aren't done with the idea of convincing the audience. It's about sowing doubt. It's about giving enough of a question mark to either partially discredit or at least slow down people's understanding. You know, it's exactly. About cohesion, right? You've got to break the cohesive will of your opponent.
Yep.
To do that, you introduce opposing views within their own team, populace, or military. Yep. Yeah. Mate, it's a... Yeah.
Scary, dude.
Scary time to be involved in that sort of stuff.
So the second gray zone tactic
they talk about. YouTube. That's what I mean by involved. We could be deep fakes.
Oh my God. That's cruel. There you go.
You can tell I'm an algorithm because my beard's been trimmed.
So the second tactic they talk about is economic coercion, intellectual property theft, and economic punishment.
Yeah, I wonder who they're talking about.
The use of Russian money laundering for bribes, corruptions, in order to affect its own politics. American companies being discriminated against in other countries. And they give China as an example. The use of Belt and Road Initiative, for example. They give large loans to desperate nations that they know cannot afford to repay them. Although I did read an article that says, hey, this is not happening. It could happen, but it's not. So I'm on the fence about that. And then the US use of tariffs to counter this and try to balance this back out, which we spoke about during Grand Strategy last week. So this is interesting. This is, you know, in a hyper-globalized world where open economies and open trade is quite important for prosperity of everyone. If you are a huge economic power and you can control that, that's called economic coercion, and it's being considered as a part of gray zone tactics. And one incident, and there's many out there that I stumbled across that I find very interesting, is China's response to the Dalai Lama. Have you heard of what China does to the Dalai Lama every time he visits a country, Mick?
Try to assassinate him?
No, no. So they use economic coercion. And the example that I found was when he visited Mongolia in 2016, and I'll read this out. China has a long-standing track record of targeting countries with hostile diplomacy and economic coercion if they host the Dalai Lama. Since the 1990s, China has limited trade with countries including France, Germany, Chile, Italy, and Brazil after their officials met with the Tibetan leader. Between a head of state or a head of government and the Dalai Lama, during the Hu Jintao era, meetings between a head of state or head of government and the Dalai Lama led, on average, to a reduction of exports to China of between 8.1% and 16.9%. Trade subsequently recovered during the second year after the visit. So it's a really great example of, hey, we don't agree with a political situation that the Dalai Lama is around. Okay, fair enough. So now we're going to... This is, for example, a country. So we are going to punish that country through economic sanctions for even visiting with him. And this is being described... Well, this is being described as part of gray zone tactics within this globalized world.
This is why people have a concern about the Belt and Road Initiative, right? The economic initiative of China is because, for a lot of countries, they see it as China doing really good by them, establishing trade routes, all that. But it's also establishing a means that can then later be used for economic coercion. So it's about, so a lot, and there's been debates in Australia because we've had, and this is really weird about our federalist system. For those listeners that don't understand, Australia's a commonwealth. It's a federalist system with states, a little bit like the US. The states can do a fair bit of negotiation, although normally foreign diplomacy is the realm of the federal government. But recently we've had a state endorse a framework for the Belt and Road Initiative, even though at the federal level, Australia is opposed to the Belt and Road Initiative because of the economic coercion that goes along with those types of political endeavours. So it's been a little bit interesting in Australia about this, but most of the people don't understand economic coercion that much, or it's not explained so much in layman's terms in the media. People just see, oh, a premier's getting in their stash with the prime minister over something to do with China.
Yeah, and it's not new. And it's been happening for a long time. And then the question that you have to ask is, okay, is that just normal competition or is that conflict? Because if it's just normal competition, then it's statecraft. If it's conflict, then it's war. Where are we here? And that's why people are saying, well, it depends on how you're using it. So let's call it gray zone operations, which is, you either agree with that or you don't agree with it, to state the wildly obvious. The final thing I wanted to talk about that is defined as gray zone operations is what they call in CSIS, ambiguous forces. Unattributed forces, island building, and the use of proxy forces. The use of proxies to offset military strength and dominance addresses the symmetry of a conflict by blurring the definition of who is actually competing in this conflict. And the majority of future conflict is what they say will be through proxy forces, not actually through attributable state uniformed forces. And they utilize the Russian little green men as an example of this.
Yeah, well, apparently they weren't Russian.
Well, here we go, right? So you can find this quickly on Wikipedia. The phrase little green men refers to the masked soldiers of the Russian Federation in unmarked green army uniforms and carrying modern Russian military weapons and equipment who appeared during the Ukrainian crisis of 2014. So it's like, oh, I don't know, we just found all this stuff, but we're not Russian. Russian stuff.
Can you speak Ukrainian? I cannot speak Ukrainian, but I'm a Ukrainian. Yeah.
So the term first arose during the annexation of the Crimea by the Russian Federation between February and March 2014, when such forces occupied and blockaded the Simferopol International Airport and most military bases in the Crimea, as well as the parliament of Simferopol. The Russian Federation initially denied that these were Russian military forces. However, Russian President Vladimir Putin in April 2014 finally confirmed the presence of the Russian military. Furthermore, numerous sources, including Russia state media, have confirmed that the little green men were Russian special forces, also known as the Spetsnaz, likely the 45th Guard Separate Reconnaissance Regiment of VDV.
And also, a lot of them were still using their social media accounts and got traced by organizations like Bellingcat, which are like a, you know, they're a privatized intelligence firm. One thing I want listeners to do, because this is also a fun show, I want you to Google Russian little green men and kittens.
Oh, no.
Have you seen those photos?
No.
It's just, it's just these soldiers, like they love just hanging out with cats.
Oh, I have. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I think I have seen it. That's cool.
Yeah, there's just like stray cats, so they hang out with them. which you know, I don't agree with how the annexation and all that sort of stuff went. And, you know, rest in peace, one of our friends, Kostya, a Ukrainian officer who unfortunately passed late last year or early this year. You know, we know people who've been over there in the Ukraine during the annexation. Not great tactics, but if you want to have a good laugh, little green men and kittens.
Done. Can recommend.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go into some, we're going to deep dive some examples of gray zone tactics of hybrid warfare. But before we do, it is about time to send some love to our next sponsors. And that is the gentleman behind Extra Specialists Group. I love talking about these guys.
They're going to put me in a movie. I know
it. I get so excited. Since 2017, Extra Specialists have been connecting Australian veterans to the entertainment industry. Through their consultancy, agency, productions and training, Extra Specialists have been changing the face of television and movies and putting those who have served onto the big screen and into your homes. Now, they've worked with Marvel, Touchstone, Netflix, Stan, and many, many more. Extra Specialist is a place to go if you want to get into the industry.
I do.
So if you have Extra Specialist skills, which Mick Cook, you certainly do not, but you may want to learn some because they will teach them to you.
I certainly do not.
Then reach out to Extra Specialist and get started now.
Let's
go
start
to their website.
Petition. Let's start a petition.
To get you
extra specialists should put me in a movie without training me.
I will definitely not sign that petition. No, so check out Extra Specialists, their website at www.extraspecialists.com. That's www.extraspecialists.com. These guys get me so excited because I'm like, I can get into a movie. Friends of mine that I served with were in Home and Away. I've got another friend who's in so many different movies that are being shot in Australia. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, you reckon they're gonna support the next DC movie?
I don't care because I don't like DC, so it doesn't really matter.
All right, let's go. I'm getting right now.
So angry now. So angry. All right. So look, we've spent this long so far just talking about different definitions.
Marvel just do joke movies. They don't do anything serious. Sorry.
We've spent this long now just talking about definitions of hybrid warfare, of gray zone tactics. And I think when you're talking about the debate, the first question you need to ask is when you talk about these activities, and we've listed dozens of them, are they conflict or are they competition? And this is the scale that I think has created the gray zone, because some people would say, well, that's definitely conflict. You know, they are attacking military intelligence. All right, that is borderline conflict. Okay, cool. But economic coercion against something that they just don't like as a nation, every nation has the moral right to instigate that if they want. It's not illegal. They control the tariffs that they issue onto a country. So that's just good old statecraft competition. But I think, you know, is it conflict? Is it competition? I think when you look at these things in isolation, you can have these debates.
I never do.
But I think where gray zone and where hybrid warfare has come up is when you talk about economic sanctions, when you talk about unattributable forces, when you talk about election tampering, and then you talk about a scenario where you're doing that as well as conventional military forces, well, that is truly combining stuff that was classic statecraft up at the high end, the sharp power, as they talked about, with normal fire and maneuver and all that sort of good stuff that you do on the battlefield. That in aggregation is being defined as hybrid warfare. And then the next question that stems from that is that hybrid warfare or is that just warfare within a globalized world? And, you know, the answer to that is not really clear, but I think I know why now in 2019, 2020, this is and before, obviously, because of the book that you talked about, why this is such a buzzword. And I came across it when I found this article from the IISS, which I cannot remember what that stands for off the top of my head. And they sort of pose this questions with regards to, is it conflict or is it competition? And they described how we got there. And it's all about what we spoke about last week in grand strategy. And that is, we now live in a multipolar world. So they give the example, to take three of the most potent weapons, information, credit, and capital, these used to be monopolized by the same powers that possess the superior firepower and moral authority, namely the US and its allies. So the US and its allies used to control both. Hey, we control the economy, we control all the information, we control all the credit and all the capital, and we've got the biggest military force in the world. We've got everything on our court, so we're good to go. But what's happening is that this is no longer the case. The weapons, information, credit, and capital, the power and the narratives have dispersed immensely across the world within this multipolar world. And I think that's why we are seeing these sort of out of that competition is sprouting hybrid warfare and is sprouting such things as gray zone operations. So I just found that very interesting and why, you know, this is kind of propped up. And then that begs to the question, and I think I'm going to know your answer, is that indeed justify a change in the character of war?
Yeah. Good point. I just found your notes on the China and Dalai Lama. I'm like, oh wow, cool. I should
just reading it now.
There's so much fascinating research you've done here that's not covered in page one of the book I read.
That's great.
Yeah, mate. That's great. Okay. Let's keep flowing.
Let's crack on. Okay. So let's look at some examples.
Just wait. We've actually got some really good conversations happening
I've been on YouTube like mania.
But let's not give Luke too much airtime. He monopolizes every episode, but he does tell a very good story about HMS Unicorn, which was a buzzword the use of buzzwords and how to get funding. I think this is probably pretty deceptive. He talks about how Admiral Henderson got MPs to buy an aircraft transport vessel because they weren't down for buying carriers. The aircraft transport vessel HMS Unicorn was an aircraft carrier, but because they called it a transport vessel, they got the funding. He's very cynical. There are people who do think I should be in a movie and that probably I could swap me out for Dan Blitarian.
That's not a good person to swap you out for.
No, because I've probably got a much better body than that dude. So let's just be honest, right? The dude doesn't even have a dad bod. No, interesting chats happening, guys. We're trying to keep up with you as much as possible, but we're also conscious that most of our listeners are not on YouTube. So we're going to keep going, and Rich will probably ask me a question that I won't know the answer to.
So we're going to go into some examples now, and this is going to be this is the part that I'm so excited about.
I'm going to make stuff up.
It just blew my mind when I was reading about all
this. This is anything after page one.
Okay, so the examples that we came across, and this in itself is going to be a problem that we're going to talk about, are a lot of Russian and a lot of Chinese examples. Okay, and I think that speaks to who is filling the airs with the proliferation of this as
we're not targeting them, and we don't think they should be targeting us. But we're they're the ones that are most notable for it. This current point in time.
Right. And an article from the RAND organization, quite reputable, have been around for quite a while. They say that there's five principles for how China and Russia are utilizing the gray zone. I think they're quite interesting. So Russia and China are utilizing gray zone techniques as a way of expressing dissatisfaction with aspects of the regional power and territorial status quo. So, you know, attacking the status quo has always been non-hegemonic states
We're at the point in history where it's hegemonic companies also enabling so for those people who are listening to this after the show, we're doing this the day after in America, we're in Australia, but we're doing it the day after President Trump signed an executive order to look into the regulation of social media companies, day that Mark Zuckerberg jumped on Fox and said that Facebook should not quality control, I suppose, truth or disinformation in terms of the political content that goes on their platform. And Twitter implemented a new policy for identifying misinformation or information that goes against their community values. And one of the first tweets that they started slamming was one by President Trump talking about the looting in Minneapolis. You know, terrible story out of there this week. But it's a fascinating time to be talking about this. Your slip, companies, but companies are part of the problem, right? And they're also part of the solution, but yeah.
That's why I meant to say that. No, thank you for highlighting that. The second principle is that
that was actually all on page 2 of this book.
Both China and Russia are employing such tactics precisely because they want to emphasize those desires and demands without completely alienating themselves from the international community and undermining their claim to great power, status, and privileges. Yes. So it's disagreeing with the status quo, but not pushing into conflict to say that you disagree with it, pushing below the threshold of conflict. So
the level of legitimacy, right?
Right. So the pressure is still felt. You're still getting your point across, but you can still hold your hands up and just go, whoa, whoa, what? Don't know what you're talking about. Those aren't Russian forces. They just,
it's the Putin on TV when they're like, what do you say about Russian troops?
It wasn't me. Shaggy style, right? The third one, all
there are no Russian troops.
All significant regional players see these activities as a threat and have significant, though in many cases constrained, appetite for US leadership. So that in itself is pretty interesting. The next one, the gray zone encompasses a wide spectrum of activities that pose consistent short and long-term risks, and the various levels of threat must be carefully distinguished. And the final one is many of these tactics take place in such realms as competing over narratives, gaining political influence, and managing economic relations in which the United States and its allies and partners have or ought to have natural advantages. And I think those principles, you know, really do quite well summarize the way that some modern states are utilizing gray zone and hybrid warfare. And if you're thinking, well, how could you compete against this, you know, call it new in air quotes style of competition or conflict that's occurring, the RAND organization offers a framework that they are offering that they think could actually defeat hybrid operations and gray zone tactics, which we won't go into now, but it's pretty interesting for those that are interested.
Give it a read there. Work against disinformation and framework development. Also, interestingly enough, there's a book, I haven't read it yet, on disinformation by Thomas Ridd. I did note that a good friend of the show, Major General Mick Ryan, commander of the Australian Defence College, he quoted Thomas Ridd's book. And, you know, one of the key points for us and many of our listeners, Rich, is that you know, hybrid warfare is something that's mentioned quite a lot in democracies, right? And it's something that's been seen as being conducted by people who aren't democratic countries or they're nominal democratic countries. And he said, you know, disinformation campaigns don't work if you're a liberal democracy, right? Because there's that legitimacy issue. You know, what you do over there, comes back to hurt you at home. And we saw this with the first Fallujah campaign of the Iraq war. You know, they used the media to spread some disinformation for a tactical effect on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And then the domestic media didn't trust the spokespeople from the US. So it's interesting, isn't it? Like the way that status, you know, they want great power status, and they understand there's still that requirement for legitimacy to be seen by, you know, and they want that status amongst countries that have different ideological views. So they know, and they're very careful not to push it to the point where they lose complete legitimacy. Which is good, because at that point, that's when it turns hot, right?
When
you got nothing to lose, right?
Exactly. And then the things that they think will give them legitimacy, that's the stuff they publicize, you know, that's the stuff they're doing overtly to try to only show one side of the coin. And with the case study that we want to look into this tonight, and you know, I found this so, so interesting, as we mentioned before, and this talks back to your force projection of social media, is the 2016 Russian information operations. And that's what Mark Zuckerberg described it when he was in front of the high court or whatever that thing was, where he was on television. I don't remember the specifics, but he talked about they were not aware at that stage that there was a Russian information operation occurring, especially on Facebook. Now, what was that operation? Great question. So it was twofold, okay? The first was that a billionaire Russian businessman and Putin associate allegedly assembled a network of troll factories private Russian companies engaging in a massive disinformation campaign.
Yeah.
Their employees
at work as a troll.
Their employees posed as Americans, created racially and politically divisive social media groups and pages, and developed fake news articles and commentary to build political animosity within the American people. Now, why would they do that? Why would they, you know, and how effective could it be going on social media and trying to create this divide? Well, there was a lot written about this.
So hopefully you're going to get talking about the rallies and stuff, right?
Yeah. And at first I was like, well, how could this be effective? And it is literally, and then I thought about what I read on social media and how angry I get when I read comments that are either so left-wing that are just not in reality or so right-wing that are not in reality. And I just think this is exactly what they're doing.
In 2016, you had Russian trolls organizing local rallies.
Yes.
Against issues. The trolls obviously didn't turn up to the local rally because, you know,
people did.
He did his 8-hour shift, organized a rally, did hand over high five to a shift mate. Oh, by the way, we've got people in Florida. They're marching on the town hall against this. Just keep them agitated. Jump back on there. They claim that they are amongst the people and just keep stirring them up. And people are taking these things, their phones. They're like, yeah. And then when these people have been interviewed subsequently by journalists and all that, did you know who this person was? They're like, I had no idea it was a Russian.
Absolutely. It creates this animosity and it creates division, and in isolation, it doesn't seem like it's worth it. But I think what we're seeing now and some of the stuff we're going to talk about in a minute,
mass.
It's just such a divide, because I don't know about you, but probably not you, but I get the vast majority of the information on my day-to-day basis is via social media. And I don't think I'm exclusive.
Yeah, that's true. News organizations now decide whether or not how long an article will stay up, and even whether or not they run a story based on how its social media performance goes. And if it doesn't go, then it doesn't hit the free-to-air. So even those people that aren't using social media for their information are being affected by that information is consumed on social media.
And it doesn't matter how silly it seems, how ridiculous it seems, how untrue it seems, there's going to be people that believe it. Now, they're not stupid people. They just happen to believe what they've read for their individual circumstance. Now that's one instance. You have a troll factory of 800 people who are producing this for 12 hours a day, as well as AI that's just generating this. This is creating division, which just blew my mind. And we're going to come back to that. Now, the second thing they did was Russian military intelligence agencies, known by the Russian acronym as the GRU, the GRU, allegedly used coordinated hacking to target more than 500 people and institutions in the United States. The Russian hackers downloaded potentially damaging information and related it to the public via WikiLeaks and under various aliases, including DC Leaks and Guccifer 2.0. So not only were they hacking and getting information,
hold the phone.
They were publicizing it. I wouldn't go, what are you doing?
I just found our old creative writing lecturer on Twitter. All right, keep going.
There you go. Okay, good. This is what happens when we record, ladies and gents. This is what happens when we record. No, but it is fascinating. And so what were they trying to do? Well, this article that I read about what Russians were trying to do is they were trying to not only create political divide, but they were trying to ensure that who they wanted to win the election won the election, and who they wanted to win, in fact, did win the election, which is Donald Trump. Now, we have a lot of American listeners, and I'm not going to be the person that talks badly about anyone's leader. But this is what they wanted to happen if this article is correct. And it's fascinating. And
it is. Here's the thing. Well done, patriotic.
Here's the thing.
Americans.
Here's the thing. It's
you
not
voted yourself into a pandemic crisis.
Well, so I ran across another article in Time magazine that talks about social media and Russia's use of it. And I'm going to read this out, okay? Because it's saying, hey, what happened in 2016? You ain't seen nothing yet, which freaked me out. It freaked me out, okay? So it described how Russia had already moved on from the rudimentary email hacks against politicians it used in 2016. Rudimentary, right? In 2016. Now the Russians were running a more sophisticated hack on Twitter. The report said that the Russians had sent expertly tailored messages carrying malware to more than 10,000 Twitter users in the Department of Defense.
Depending
on the interest of the targets, the messages offered links to stories on recent sporting events or the Oscars, which had taken place the previous weekend. When clicked, the links took users to a Russian-controlled server that downloaded a program allowing Moscow hackers to take control of the victim's phone or computer and their Twitter account. All right? So, what's happening now? Why would you want to take over someone's Twitter account? Well, let me just read out the sample they give. Now, counterintelligence officials wondered, what chaos could Moscow unleash with thousands of Twitter handlers that spoke in real time with authority of the armed forces of the United States? At any given moment, perhaps during a natural disaster or terrorist attack, Pentagon Twitter accounts might send out false information. As each tweet corroborated another, the covert Russian agents amplified the message even further afield. The result could be panic and confusion. It's terrifying. It's proper terrifying what is actually out there and what can be done. Now, at the same time, I'm very, very cautious that am I just reading someone who's just dinging the panic bell and just going a bit crazy? And it takes us back to the question, is this conflict or is this competition? What end of the scale does this sit in? And is it indeed hybrid warfare, gray zone operations, or is it just computer hacking by individuals? I'm still very much on the fence about it.
Yeah.
Does that freak you out, man?
Yeah, it does, mate. I was working in social media for the Australian Army at the time of the election. So I was watching one of those barometers during the election. And barometers during the election. That makes absolutely no sense. And if you're watching me wave my hands, that also doesn't make any sense. But it's one of those election meters, you know, you tune in, it's a bit like a fuel gauge in your car and it swings to either side and it was going closer and closer and closer and closer to Trump. I just couldn't believe it. So I was jumping, I was tracking social media and I was watching it live. And, you know, I know a lot of people were able to do this, but I was in a place where most people don't have access to a lot of social media tools. So I was quite lucky to be able to do a lot of those tools because we used it for our public affairs messaging. And you're just sitting there just watching all these techniques being employed. And particularly when you work in social media in a communications role, you're very transparent when you're working for public institutions, right?
Yeah.
So you don't employ a lot of the techniques that are being employed. You could probably get your message out a lot more, but it doesn't matter if you're doing... You know, if you're using a nefarious way of delivering a positive message, you will eventually undermine your legitimacy, right? So we're sitting there just watching it and we're just like, it's got to be social media. And then everyone I work with is hating on me because I work in social media. They're like, it's your fault Trump got elected. I'm like, I would have voted Hillary. I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Josh on... what is this thing? YouTube. Oh my God. Josh on YouTube brought up the point.
It's actually one of the main tools for misinformation.
Brought up a great point. You know, the case of Lenin and the Germans planting Lenin in Russia for the Bolshevik uprising in 1917, which essentially took Russia out of the conflict, which eased up the eastern flank of the German offensive. You know, they had a certain agenda. They knew if they had a certain political leader in there that change would happen. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but it is not a new tactic. It's just a new way of applying it is what we're seeing by the Russian bots. So it's a great observation. And thank you for bringing that in as well, Josh. And then the final
I just want to do one more Trump thing before you close this section off. So someone on Twitter has retweeted a Donald Trump tweet. And it's quite interesting. You know, Twitter has actually said this tweet violated the Twitter rules about glorifying violence. However, Twitter has determined that it may be in the public's interest for the tweet to remain accessible. This, and then you click view. That's Donald Trump's tweet about telling the protests in Minneapolis that when the looting starts, the shooting starts. He implies that the National Guard are going to go in there and shoot a lot of people. You know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, the riots are happening now. The police are already killing people. So let's see if the National Guard can, you know, do a little bit better.
Maybe we could do an episode
on the use of reserve forces in domestic operations. We could probably do that.
I would love to do that. That's great.
Let's do an episode on that. But anyway, right. This is the comment that someone's posted. Sorry, we're getting there. Someone's suddenly about to realize that the natural response to being held legally liable for user content is to moderate the user content that exposes you to liability. Good point. But what I actually want to do, I'm not actually hating on, well, I'm normally hating on Trump. I'm not actually dragging out this about Trump. We're talking about the countries that are using disinformation the most at the moment. The platforms that are using Twitter, an extremely big one, Facebook, a really large one. These are companies that are incorporated in the US. Mm. And largely, unless they have a server in a country, but largely they are beholden to the US laws. If they have a server in Australia, then they're beholden to Australian laws. I know that when I used to work with Facebook, they only had a few people in Australia, right? Because most of it was, they didn't have much infrastructure here. The countries that are best exploiting Twitter, best exploiting Facebook, are not legally liable and also do not hold those companies legally liable. But they're also known domestically for extremely repressive policies towards similar platforms and companies. So it's one of those things where you are using your enemy's culture against them, right? So there's no way something like Facebook, and Russians got their own version of Facebook, but there's no way the freedom that people have to put any type of content on it would occur in Russia on similar platforms. WeChat and Weibo in China is used in a much more controlled and controlling way than Facebook. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to turn around and use it. China are not going to use Facebook or Twitter to their point. So it's about understanding how these tools are used and the legalities and the lawfare is so interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, countries are not the same. And, you know, as we spoke about last week with Grand Strategy, you know, one of the criticisms of China is, hey, economic powerhouse, an amazing rise. But the very thing, and I like how you summarized this last week, the very thing that has given them the rise, you know, not having a democracy, having a communist political system, is the very thing that's going to defeat their rise or going to stop their rise, which is one of the articles that we stumbled across.
It's going to limit them.
It's the thing that's projected them, but it's going to limit them at the same time. Well, same with social media. What's the best thing about being in such a liberal democracy is that we can express ideas and we can engage and we can interconnect with each other. But when someone takes advantage of that, it's the thing that's limiting us as well.
Like anti-vaxxers used to be the people that lived in hippie communes, right? Now they live in Manly in Australia.
Yeah. And that's... we should do an episode on anti-vaxxers, I think.
Let's not.
I think that'll be... And then we could do Flat Earth as well. Let's combine them together.
But I think the reserve forces in domestic operations, let's not... let's wait a little bit so that we don't talk too close to what is obviously going to be real pain point for some of our American listeners and viewers. And our hearts go out to our US brothers and sisters, because we know that it's a tough time in your country right now, both with COVID and also with... the riots related to race issues, but we will do that. Let's talk about military forces used at home.
But let's segue from that, because but it's a good point, you know. And America's a great case study. And if you link all of this stuff that we've been speaking about together, hybrid warfare, gray zone tactics, what China and Russia have been doing, you know, this is a very very devastating situation for America to be in. But the question we have to ask is it a situation that has occurred, and nothing is because of one reason, but is some of the fuel that's been thrown in this fire foreign interference that has happened because of what we're talking about now? Is that indeed the result of interference in the gray zone?
Set up, and we know the protests at Charlottesville, which were around Black Lives Matter, we know that elements of that were interfered with by Russian. It's been claimed, if you're Russian, you're listening to this, it's been claimed that Russian trolls were interfering and stirring up the riots, and we know that someone lost their life there.
So you're looking at America. Has Russia and China weaponized all of these things? You know, it's no longer a question of statecraft. It's no longer a question of competition. It is a part of their conflict. And
question on YouTube, then... you know, you're kind of skirting around the violence issue there. Well, you know, there are violent and lethal results. People are dying.
Yeah, exactly. And so is this, you know, call it phase zero operations of something that can come down? What we're not seeing here is we're not seeing... Right. You know, what we're not seeing here is we're not seeing...
Tomorrow when the war began.
tomorrow is we're not seeing state on state conflict, which is, you know, some of the hybrid warfare stuff. But, you know, is this the start of it? And what made me think about this is it's really hard to read about hybrid warfare. It's really hard to read about all of this stuff without being overwhelmed by, you know what, this is a bit conspiracy theory like, because there's so much on it and there's so much written about only Western countries being affected by hybrid warfare.
Yeah, what about others?
What about others, right? And is it something that we've just invented? And is it quite useful to even call it hybrid warfare, or should we be very much calling it something else? And it you know, one of the last articles I want to talk about before we sum up is one called Blurred Lines. Okay. So it's Blurred Lines by a guy called, it's a great song, but don't put it or else this will never get on YouTube.
I am not putting any more music that we don't have the rights to on our YouTube, because we have, hey, everyone who listens to this show on Wooshka or any of the podcast listeners don't often view it, jump on YouTube and watch our climate change episode, even if you've listened to it already, because it was off YouTube for a week because I didn't check that we had breached copyright.
And it makes it look like all of you don't care about climate change.
It makes no one's watched it. We look good. We look good because we're trying to help.
Exactly.
You guys
all right. Let's finish up. So it talks, it's for Donald Stoker and Craig Whiteside, and they talk about, they talk about how this concept of gray zone operations and this concept of hybrid warfare, get it out. Don't worry about these popular terms. And why? Well, you know what? They're useful for conversations. They're useful for what we're doing now and talking about things that are happening in the world. What they're not useful for is for the formation of strategy and for the formation of policy that's going to get people or states through a particular hard time. And these are some of the things they wrote. In terms, as well as the concepts arising from them, should be eliminated, okay? From the strategic lexicon. They cause more harm than good and contribute to an increasingly dangerous distortion of the concepts of war, peace, and geopolitical competition, with the resultant negative impact on the crafting of security strategy for the United States and its allies and partners around the world. Don't do it. Okay. Yeah. And then they give you four very specific problems that they create. We'll finish up here. Yeah. Number one, they are examples of poorly constructed new theories that more often than not cloud rather than clarify. They're not saying it doesn't exist. They're not saying it doesn't happen, but it is not new theory.
Can I read one out?
Yes.
They distort or ignore history, sometimes by claiming to be new when we have seen similar confusion in the past.
Yep. They feed a dangerous tendency to confuse war and peace.
Can I do the next one?
No.
I'm throwing my story.
They undermine
strategic thinking by the construction of critical political and strategic documents on the basis of flawed ideas, even sometimes resulting in strategic guidance derived from a focus on tactical matters, which, boom, goes straight to our question from Josh.
There you go.
Excellent. Boom. And what I said to Josh's thing on the feed was, you know, he's like, how do you stop letting this interfere in strategy? I said, well, you've got to have an assessments team keeping their eye on the whole game, while you've got a tactics team going after the ball, right? Like, you've got to be able to have you got to do both, and you've got to have that condor moment as well. You know, you've got to have someone sitting above going, hey, let's not do the strategy around what's happening at the ball now. Let's get the rest of the team going. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm saying is that war is about ball sports.
Yeah, look at you, man. A bit of a soccer expert. No big deal. So
we wanted
to provide both sides of the fence. And if you want to read about, because you will not find much that denigrates, the concept of gray zone conflict, the concept of hybrid warfare, because it's a new buzzword and it gives people a whole bunch of stuff to write about.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is a lot of the writing on it is talking about it as opposed to like talking about people's problems with it as opposed to like it.
Yes. That's a really good point, mate. I did not come across a single article that's like, hey, here's how we can use hybrid warfare against other people. That's a really good point.
The book by Williamson Murray and Ed, Peter Monsour. I mean, it's an edited book, so there's lots of academics in there. And it's all case studies, right? But even from the intro, you don't get that feel. From the intro, there's still the debate about hybrid warfare. But then when you get to chapter one and that, like you go straight to like the Irish Rebellion in the 1600s. So there's case studies in there. So that's why that book's really, really good. But it takes a lot to actually find, especially when you Google it, everyone gives you, there's so many articles on their hot take on the term hybrid warfare, but I actually just want to dive deep into the techniques, tactics, you know, the procedures, how people are doing it, what is possible for, you know, Western military to do, what is not. So yeah, sorry, I interrupted with that, but it's just one thing I think is really interesting, and our listeners, we would love to hear feedback on our Facebook page or on Twitter on what you have found out there. Post us the links, what you found out there that's a really good deep dive into the how of the warfare part of hybrid warfare.
Yeah. All right, let's finish up. I'm going to ask you for your final thoughts in a minute, Mick, so I don't put you on the spot. But as I spoke about, when I sum up everything that we've talked about, everything that I've read, everything that I've been thinking about when I've been focused on this, is I think about, as I said, counterinsurgency. Okay. So when counterinsurgency was the buzzword, right, in the early 2000s, insurgency was not a new concept. All right. Although a lot of people said it was new.
And they call it a coin, so it's new.
Right. But it wasn't a new concept. And that was the first mistake a lot of people made. And countering an insurgency was also not a new concept. It has been happening for a very, very, very long time. But what was new was that the insurgency was not inside a state-on-state conflict. What was new was that America had to face an insurgency that was defeating it when it was trying to apply all of its military force and just wanting another military force to come against it. And that wasn't what they faced. They faced an insurgency. So we're like, oh my God, what we're trying to do is not working. This must be new. Let's focus on it. And I'm overwhelmed with that concept now. Right. So when we talk about all the things we've spoken about tonight, cyber, information ops, ambiguous forces, economic coercion, these concepts are not new, right? They have been happening for a very long time. But in this humble podcaster's opinion, what is new and what makes this feel new is that we no longer have a single polar world. America is no longer arguably the hegemon of the world. And that status quo is up for debate and is up for grabs. So that is new. The continual depth of hyperglobalization, that is new, and that has sort of, you know, really shown its teeth and its detail during a COVID time. And what's new for me in particular, and I think because I was very much swayed by the Russian story, is that the use of social media as almost the single source of news that can be used and owned is also new as well. And when you take this new world of which we don't know who's a superpower or in charge anymore, we don't know how globalization is going to go as people start to look for protectionism and isolationism. And we don't know how much social media is controlled by who and who is controlling it. I think this in aggregation is actually new. But is it in fact required a new term that is called hybrid warfare? Does it need a new term called gray zone operations? Has the very character of war itself changed? I'm not so convinced yet when we look at it from that perspective, but I agree with you wholeheartedly, first time in 20 years, that it is a great term to get a conversation started. And I think tonight's episode has been a great example of that. How say you, Mick Cook, on a Friday night?
One, I'll say you're a liar because you agreed that that was the best microphone you could buy.
I bought this microphone only because you said buy this microphone. So.
And it's better than mine, so I'm kind of pissed off about it. I said pissed. I'll get it. So I did want to say that Donald Stoker, who wrote that Blurred Lines article, like a book he has written is called Clausewitz. It's a biography of Clausewitz, right? And why I'm talking about that, well, he's the one who sparked this, you know, he didn't spark it, but he's the one people use to debate the character and nature of war, and they use him to, you know, a lot of people use him to dissuade hybrid warfare. But if you actually read the biography, read the one written by Donald Stoker, mm-hmm. and you will find out that Carl himself led and trained partisan forces, which is what civil militia were called, doing a type of hybrid warfare. He wrote a paper on small wars or little wars, talking about those types of conflicts. And what I do like about the term hybrid warfare, and this is the term hybrid warfare, mm-hmm. is it's people use the term warfare, and the warfare is the how of war, right? Mm-hmm. They don't say hybrid war. I would be much more apoplectic, whatever that word is. You know that word where you like skits out. If people were going around saying hybrid war, because I'd be like, no, war is war, man. War is warfare is not warfare. Warfare is different in each war. warfare goes to the heart of the character of the conflict you're in, whether or not you think there's an enduring nature and changing character, or you think, you know, nature always, the nature of war is ever changing. It doesn't really matter if you take away those big esoteric concepts and you talk about war and you talk about warfare, and war relates to the phenomenon and the what, and warfare relates to the hows. I think largely what we're finding ourselves in is we've got a lot of warfare being conducted and people aren't sure whether or not there's a war. And that's what hybrid warfare links to. We've got warfare without a war.
Really good. Really good. Yeah. What a great way to end that podcast, mate. That was quite profound. That was really well done. All right. So there you have. Beautiful. There you have it.
Just ruined
that. That is our take on hybrid warfare and gray zone operations. And I really hope you have enjoyed it as much as we have, because I have certainly had a great time reading all about it.
I love chatting with people on YouTube, man. I love it.
It's really fun, right? It's really fun. And a bit of a teaser, in the near future, we're thinking of having a few more dialogues with people about such things as hybrid warfare and gray zone operations. So watch this space. Could be something that's coming up your way.
Dialogues, we don't mean just chatting. Like, we want to talk with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like our good guys on YouTube, Josh, Kiwi Sapa, Lens of History, Mike Cook, Saber Wolf, the stuff that they've been sharing with us and getting some ideas flowing. It's been fantastic. So if you're hearing this and you want to be a part of the conversation, you are more than welcome. Hop on when we're on every Friday night. All right, let's finish with some socials. Mick, where are we at with our socials?
We are at everywhere. In fact, you know what? I think we should do like a Reddit thread as well, but we don't have one yet, listeners.
We're on a Reddit account. We just haven't got a thread.
A Reddit account. We just don't have a Reddit thread. So if you like Reddit, if you think we should use Reddit, let's do that. We can also do Discord and all that sort of stuff, but we're time poor. So the socials we have at the moment are the socials we know you have. We know your mums and dads have. We know your cousins have.
Too much info.
Oh, sorry. No, but I've got a Russian guy that gives me this.
We know your Uncle Bob who lives at house.
Right, fine. I thought that's what we're talking. Okay. All right. So we don't do hybrid warfare on our own socials, but you can find us on Facebook on War for Idiots. Find us on there. Like the page. Subscribe. Send other people to us. Find us on YouTube. We are on YouTube for those people that aren't watching us, who are just listening to us in the car or on the treadmill. Jump on YouTube. Subscribe. You don't even have to watch us on YouTube. Just find us on YouTube. Hit subscribe. Hit like, and I'll be happy. You don't even have to listen to us. Just give us 5 stars on iTunes.
That's not the message we want to give out.
Individual Twitter pages. Okay, so we have Rich. He's at Richie_TT. Great new profile pic on there, Rich. I love it.
Yeah,
great. You like people it? Actually know what you look like now. It's brilliant.
It kind of looks like the photo I had before.
Yeah, I'm a little bit annoyed that I don't have a picture up there of myself. I think Klauswitz was your picture before, so it's totally different.
Kind of the same.
Anyway, I'm going to have to change my profile picture, because yours, you look like a podcaster. I look like a backpacker. Sorry,
you look like a backpacker. You look like a cheap Crocodile Dundee.
That's right. I was backpacking at the time. But @Mick_Cook, you can follow me. Feel free to get into rigorous debate. I've actually been having a go at a few people this week, including people whose articles we've quoted, like Aspie had a crack at them. Please don't have a crack at me. They're probably smarter than I am.
Way smarter.
Not the two people I had a crack at. And please leave a review, share the episode, and keep the support coming. Tell your friends. Except for you, Josh. We don't like your friends. Everyone else, tell your friends.
Tell your friends, hey, let's build our numbers, get us spread out there, because we love doing this. And the more people we can speak to, the more ideas come flooding in. The depth of our conversations improve. It is better for everyone.
One more ad, man. I just want to give a shout out to the TDP community. We're doing a club on Sunday night. So for those people that know, I do another show. Richie doesn't let me talk about it much on this show.
No.
I do another show. It's better than this one. So go to the website, thedeadprussian.com. Click on TDP community, join the community. And on Sunday night, we'll be jumping on doing a teleconference book club over a book called Transforming Command by Eden Shamir. And it's all about Mission Command. And I might even put up the War for Idiots episode on Mission Command.
One of our best.
It is one of our best. All right.
All right. Leave a review, share this episode, and keep the support coming. You dear ladies and gentlemen, why we do this thing we do. So until next time, this is Rich.
And this is Mick.
And remember that we may be idiots,
but so are you.
That guy there.
War for Idiots is a TDP production. All opinions expressed by individuals on the podcast are those of the individual and not necessarily representative of any other organisation. The music used during War for Idiots is Fireworks by Jazzara and is used under an Attribution Share Alike 3.0 international licence.